The word narcissism, it gets thrown around quite a bit, but is it one of those words that we just like to use a little bit too much, or are we really completely surrounded by narcissism and narcissistic personality disorder and all that everywhere we look? And there's a lot of caveats to this. Not everybody who has narcissistic traits, which, by the way, we all do, are covert narcissists, have narcissistic personality disorder. But there are certainly many cases, and many of the cases that we follow, where obviously we can't really diagnose or can't really diagnose them from afar. But if you just look at it and you really study it, you go, the likelihood of this person having this type of personality disorder is very, very evident. Joining me to discuss, Heather Boorman, trauma therapist and author and podcaster. Heather, there's a lot I want to talk about. I want to talk about Rex Heuermann. I want to talk about Alec Murdaugh. I want to talk about Koberger and then several other cases where it looks like that's probably what's going on. And I want to talk about how people kind of get sucked into those relationships and how they're able to kind of get along for as long as they do. But first, let's just kind of talk about the basics of narcissism, narcissistic personality disorder, what the differences are, covert narcissism, and really, you know, how this exists in our ecosystem out there and why we're all so much more aware of it today than we have been in the past. I'll let you go there and kind of start to explain that.
Sure. Thanks, Tony. Yes. So I'm glad you mentioned that it's a spectrum and that there are, just because there's narcissistic tendencies does not mean that they necessarily qualify for an official NPD diagnosis. Mm-hmm. And in fact, from my perspective, the DSM, which is the, you know, the Bible of what we use to diagnose mental health disorders, is really skewed towards overt narcissistic traits. Mm-hmm. So it's actually really difficult to even diagnose a covert narcissist based on the criteria that's in the DSM. So essentially, when we're looking at actual diagnosis, we're looking for feelings of grandeur, those people that believe that they're God's gift to whatever they are, will use and abuse people around them in order to get what they want. Their focus is really just on their own desires and their own well-being.
And that's the type of person who, like at a party or something, can go, that's a narcissist. Because, I mean, they stand out. I mean, at least the overt ones stand out many times. But the covert ones, that's a new one for me that I've been learning about recently. That is really interesting because it's not the waving the flag, look how good I am, and bragging and, you know, love bombing and all that. I mean, there may be certain traits in there, but it's harder to notice, and probably also why we get to talking about some of these cases, why they're able to go as far as they have.
Absolutely. So covert narcissists, at the core, it's still all about them, and really, the best way for me to understand narcissism is to realize that at their core, whether overt or covert, they don't have a sense of self. Mm-hmm. So the only way that they really know that they're living and that they're real is by watching the impact they have on other people. That's the same whether it's overt or covert. So overt, yes, the ones that we obviously know. The covert ones, though, they have an invested interest in maintaining a public positive profile. Mm-hmm. So they're going to be more likely to do things like apologize. I put in air quotes because it's really a faux apology. They're going to be much more hidden and behind the scenes with any of their more aggressive types of behaviors. They're going to use more of the psychological manipulations. And so the comparison I have is an overt narcissist is like a big meteor that just hits. And a covert narcissist is like the Colorado River that just chips away gradually. And so oftentimes victims don't even see or notice what's happening. It's the littler things, telling a joke about something that's your insecurity. And then, oh, I was just joking. And so it becomes much more confusing and there's a lot more cognitive dissonance for the victims to try and sort through.
And that can be really scary because you don't necessarily see it coming. I think one of the biggest questions that, you know, a lot of us have when you encounter that sort of thing and just the path of destruction that they end up going down in relationships and such is, are they aware? Are these actions that they're taking, the word I use quite a bit is nefarious. You know, are they aware that some of their actions actually come across as quite nefarious, as if someone would look back and go, plan that out, didn't you? But I guess, are they? I mean, or is it just kind of a way of being in life and they don't really realize it? And it's how they operate. So to the rest of us, it's very off the normal, beaten, healthy path, if we're a healthy, normal person, quote unquote. But it very much differs, than a lot of healthy thinking. So it stands out as like, wow, you'd really gotta plan this out. But are they? Or is, again, like I said, is this just, it's just how they operate. It's their code.
Yes, is the answer to that question.
Yeah, okay.
So again, it's a spectrum. So the more malignant a person is, and in my mind, I have kind of narcissists who have figured out that this is how they get their needs met. So maybe there was a lot of neglect in childhood and they learned how to manipulate in order to get their needs met. It's always intentional, but whether they're consciously trying to hurt people, maybe not.
Yeah.
But then you get down to the malignant side and there's a lot more scheming. There's a lot more intentionality, much closer to psychopathy than just a coping strategy. So yes, it's always intentional. Is it always conscious? It depends on how malignant the person is.
And I guess what we define as conscious or not, I mean, what are they feeding? Like, what is the ultimate goal here with individuals like this, where it's patterns of behavior that continue over and over, even though they quite often have negative reinforcement at some point, to it once they're figured out. But what is the goal? Is it just that quick satisfaction, that quick recognition that they're not feeling? Walk me through that a little bit.
Sure. So there's two primary goals. One is to seek supply. So to, again, find their way of knowing that they exist because they're creating reaction in other people. And in fact, oftentimes, especially for the more malignant narcissists, having that reaction be unpleasant gives them more fuel, more supply. So they know that they have more control and more power. So really it's a lot of coercive control type motivations. The second motivation is, there's three. So the second motivation is to avoid having to actually be introspective and feel whatever shame is way underneath the surface. It's way underneath the surface. So I want to be careful about being too compassionate towards them because that's actually a trait that they use against their targets. They tend to target people who are very compassionate and willing to give and forgive and give multiple chances and look for the underlying reasons. So if we have too much compassion, that's actually kind of dangerous, which is weird for me to say as a therapist who has a lot of compassion,
sure.
but we need to be careful with that. But they want to avoid feeling that shame. And then the third motivation is really getting the most benefit for the least amount of work. Okay. So they, especially covert narcissists, tend to partner up with people who are full of life, are intelligent, are caring, giving, successful. And then they the narcissist slowly takes less and less responsibility throughout the relationship and just kind of rides on their coattails.
It's an interesting thing to think about where it's a slow chip away type process that happens. And a lot of people are not necessarily attuned to it until it gets to such an extreme level. How is it that they're so good at doing that? I mean, I guess it's kind of like lobster, you know, in the boiling water where it's just kind of a slow boil and suddenly you get there. Are they aware that they're having that impact on the people around them? Or is it, you know, one of those things where, I mean, again, it's just kind of like, it's the pattern. This is how they've always gone through life. And they think this is just how relationships work.
Mm-hmm. I don't think they care if they're having that impact on the people around them, so long as they're getting mm-hmm. what they need,
yeah.
so long as they're getting some sort of emotional reaction. And it follows a very, narcissistic abuse follows a very, they all kind of read the same playbook. So it follows the same pattern.
And like I mean, once convention. You know it,
no. Yeah, seriously.
Yeah.
I mean, once you know it, you can predict what's coming.
Yeah.
So the first stage is the love bombing, the idealization. They are so in tune to their victims. They're listening very attentively. It feels like you're being cherished and loved. They mirror their victim. So they, again, they have no sense of self, so they can put on whatever self they want to. So for me, I was into hiking. My husband, who became my husband, was not, but he became a hiker at the beginning and was really enthusiastic. And things like that, where they put on the persona to be someone's perfect match and are filled with compliments and all of the positive fairy tale things. And then it moves into the devalue stage. So once they have you hooked, then they slowly start just putting in little things. So using the hiking example, he'd slowly start complaining about it. Do we really want to go hiking today? It's kind of hot, right? And it's small enough that it feels... sure, I can understand that, right? And then it gets even bigger and bigger over time. So they really are adept at using intermittent reinforcement. So it goes back and forth between the devaluing and the love bombing. Intermittent reinforcement means they give you some special treat every once in a while. And we know neurologically that we then are wired to be looking for and expecting that treat to come. And so we'll tolerate more and more of the devaluing and the discomfort because we know that that person at the beginning is really who they really are. Mm-hmm. And they're going to show that again at some point. So, and then after that, after, well, I mean, it's not linear, but then the next phase is the discard phase. And that might be the silent treatment, or it might be actually just dropping somebody, or it might be affairs, or getting so into their video game that's all they're doing for days at a time, and just completely disregarding the person that they're partnered with. The key, especially with the covert narcissist, is that in most relationships, the victim is with them for decades because it's so slow. And it's so much of that back and forth that they might realize that they feel like something's wrong, but they don't know what it is. And so they've learned to accept scraps, and they've learned that this is what it is. Every marriage takes work.
Sick of the ads?
We opt to.
Start listening with no commercials now and get access to all of our episodes in advance of everyone else.
Become a True Crime Today Premium Plus subscriber on Apple Podcasts.
Search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts or go to our podcast page and sign up now.
True Crime Today Premium Plus.
Sign up now.